You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on this Friday. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers producing the program as we get you ready for the weekend. A lot to get to on the program today. Happy Friday, Jacob.
Yeah, happy Friday. We're here. We're rocking and rolling. We're going to make some picks. We got Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland, Paul Savage coming in, top of the next hour for us, getting us ready to go. Always a lot of fun on a Friday, reacting to Thursday night football, of course. We'll look ahead to a Chiefs Monday night football game. We'll look ahead to a K-State game against Houston. We'll take you around any of the interesting headlines. You can, of course, get in touch with the program, as you always can, via the IHOP hotline. And that's available to you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays, new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Happy to be here with you, Tommy. How was Halloween? Did you Scrooge it up?
I did, yeah. I mean, I was only out for a short period of time. You and I were texting this morning. We're both, I don't even want to say we're both under the weather. You've been dealing with a cough. I felt like crap yesterday, or last night at least, and I only trick-or-treated with my kids for maybe an hour, and then I was done. And, you know, we talked about it yesterday. I don't love it, but I didn't feel good either, so I went to bed. I crashed. We're going to see how today goes because I feel a little bit better, but man, I could use the weekend. I need to rest a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't feel bad at all. I just have this stupid cough. You must have been hopped up. You confused me greatly. So I was just, we were out late trick-or-treating in the neighborhood till, I don't know what time it was, 9 or 9:30.
Yeah.
I looked down and I see a text and you asked me, do you still like the Jets? I was like, they must be getting smashed.
Yeah.
And I don't even know when you sent that. And I look and it was 10-7. And I'm like, what is happening in this game? And then, of course, they go on to win by 11 points.
Yeah.
So I was very confused by that. They did what they needed to do last night on Thursday Night Football. It's interesting. I almost am a little bit more concerned about what we saw from the Texans as far as like bigger picture things than the Jets. The Jets kind of did what I thought they would do, right? Like they're better than their record, certainly. Their defense finally stepped up a little bit. Man, Houston offensive line looked bad.
Yeah.
And that's not a wide receiver problem. That's a problem that, you know, is maybe a little more holistic. But, you know, credit to the Jets. That was one of the more incredible plays you'll ever see from Garrett Wilson. That's the first play, basically, I saw when I turned the game on. But if they crawl back into it, they're not a nothing. And I think Houston, who we thought might be something for sure, is probably in a little more danger than just having wide receivers injured.
Yeah, it's funny because I watched most of the first half. You watched the second half. I fell asleep at halftime. I took NyQuil and I was out. I was done. And when I texted you, if you still like the Jets, they were so bad.
Really?
At least in the first half. Like Aaron Rodgers at one point, I think, was 4 of 10 for 14 yards passing. Like, it was awful. They had a touchdown called back because the player that scored the TD, and I wasn't familiar with his name. That was the first time I'd heard him. Malachi Corning, I think it was his name.
Corley.
I wasn't familiar with Malachi Corley. He dropped the ball before he crossed the goal line. They called that touchdown back in the first half for the Jets. And, you know, the Texans weren't much better, but, man, the Jets looked awful in the first half. So that's when I texted you asking if you still like the Jets. Then I woke up this morning after being dead to the world for 12 hours or whatever, and I saw the Jets had won. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, they looked so bad in the first half.
That's what confused me, because I don't remember liking the Jets. I liked them in the game. Did you mean in that game? Like that bet?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, because I said the Jets seem like the bet, as wild and wacky as that is, that they would be favored against the Texans just because of the injury to the Texans receivers and the desperation of the Jets. But I got to tell you, from the second half, which is what I watched, the Texans, they better figure something out, because Stroud can't go like that under duress like he did. Their run game is good. But if I'm watching, and again, it's one game on the road, and we don't watch every snap of every game, but I watch a lot of NFL football on Sundays. I would say that, I would not put them over Pittsburgh. I would not put them over Baltimore. I would not put them over Buffalo. I think they have some real work to do, and they're going to have to figure some things out. Maybe Nico Collins will help, but man, CJ Stroud didn't have a prayer last night. He was under fire constantly in that game. And I had heard some things, just sort of watching and listening and reading NFL coverage, that there was real concern about their offensive line. And so I was maybe more, apt to look at it last night, but it did not look good at all. Like, their line is a problem, and we know that's a problem. And they don't have Patrick Mahomes back there. As much as I like CJ Stroud, they don't have Houdini back there, pulling rabbits out of his hat every other play when you don't have good line play all the time.
Yeah, they also dealt with some pretty big injuries in the first half on that offensive line. Laremy Tunsil, was in under the blue medical tent for a while. Kenyon Green had a shoulder injury that he went back to the locker room. So, they were banged up, especially on that offensive line in the second half. But the biggest injury was Will Anderson hurting that ankle and going down. He, I know that he finished out at least the first half, but that's significant. And depending on what his prognosis is moving forward, I don't know if it's something that's going to, keep him on the sideline moving forward. But, I do think that that's something to definitely keep our eyes on, because he's the straw that stirs the drink for the Texans defensively. And they've got to have him.
They got to have all of them. But I think the point of all of it is how quickly, like, the power structures can shift in the NFL, probably more than any other sport, really. Like, all of a sudden things can get turned upside down. And that is what has been, to me, the most remarkable thing about the Chiefs being unbeaten, is they have had ample opportunity for that to happen to them based on the injuries that they've dealt with, and it just hasn't. And I don't know, at some point, well, right now, that's a real strength of this team, right? Like, it's one of the most impressive things, if not the most impressive thing that they've done all year. They're staying power in it, but, like, I think Chiefs fans can be appropriately optimistic that they're going to get a lot of their injured players back, and they're going to be in good shape to make some noise as this thing works its way through, as other teams have not been able to overcome some of these significant injuries.
Yeah, that's going to be the key, I think, to all of this, is that, there are a couple of players that the Chiefs have that are going to be working their way back from injury, I would think, relatively soon. Charles Omenihue, I know everybody's been waiting on his, long-awaited return this season, after going down with that knee injury last year. And then, I don't know what the overall prognosis is on Juju Smith-Schuster, if this is something that's going to be a chronic hamstring thing that, hampers him throughout the entire season, or if he'll be able to return sooner rather than later. But while the Chiefs, every team in the NFL, you're gonna be dealing with injuries. Like, that's just a given. It's going to happen. The question then becomes, like, how do you respond to that? And what does the depth look like depending on the position that you're feeling a little bit short in? And that's where, I do think we talked about it earlier this week, where the Chiefs went out and they acquired Josh Uche and what he's going to be able to provide them from a depth perspective, because they are still waiting for Charles Omenihue. And so that kind of solidifies, or at least, helps fortify the depth at edge rush for the Kansas City Chiefs moving forward. You've got to have that depth. You've got to have, you know, the personnel. And so it's not about who gets injured. It's about what you do after the injuries happen. And I think that's really going back to last night's game. That's what the Texans are going to really have to be asking themselves as this week progresses. How are we going to respond to this? Because if we don't have the dudes, then we've got to try to make sure that we do something maybe before the trade deadline on Tuesday or whatever that looks like to fortify that. You and I were, I think, both in agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Texans would be a major player for Nico, or not for Nico Collins, but for Deontay Johnson to help with Nico Collins and Steph Diggs being injured. The Ravens got Johnson. They've got to go and try to find some reinforcements.
At least that it'll make sense. They'll get Collins back. I think Tank Dell's good. I'm far less concerned about that, honestly, than that offensive line for them. Because if they, you know, you just like you envision playing a couple of good pass rushes, including the Chiefs, if you're in the postseason, and that's going to be a problem. Same thing with the Jets last night. You know, and I only watched the second half, but the Jets were impressive and they had a couple of things go their way, certainly. But Aaron Rodgers was making those kinds of throws, managing the clock perfectly late. They were very in tune. There was a, you know, the drive that they scored, the final touchdown to Devontae Adams on. Every player was making the right decision. It did not look like a poorly coached team. Breece Hall, inbounds, going out of his way to make sure he was at like inbounds. Like they were executing very well. And we brought this up yesterday. And look, the Jets are far down the list. I'm more interested if they can make a postseason run because I think Aaron Rodgers is always, you know, spooky in the playoffs. But other than the New England loss last week, like again, their losses are on the road to San Francisco when they were much healthier, Denver, on the road to Minnesota, Buffalo, and on the road to Pittsburgh. They have played one of the more difficult schedules in the NFL so far. That was a big win for them last night. Now they've got to follow it up because they'll play two pretty good teams before the bye week in the next 2 weeks, but not like some of the teams they played. They go to Arizona and then they play Indianapolis, then they get a bye. They don't have a ton of schedule relief, so I would say it's still unlikely for them to reach the postseason because their schedule is just terrible. I mean, it's Seattle, Miami, Jacksonville, the Rams, Buffalo, Miami. If Tua's healthy, your only game where they're probably favored, maybe Seattle, for sure Jacksonville, and that's probably about it. So they've got a steep hill to climb. So I would say, you know, if we're saying are they going to make it as of today, I would say the chances are less than 50%. Because of the schedule they still have to play, but it's not as bad as the schedule they've already played. And they have the players. They're one of the more interesting. And I know I say that all the time, but they really are. With look at the plays Garrett Wilson makes, and Devontae Adams is there, and Breece Hall's there. The defense looked better last night than it had. Is that sustainable? I don't know. But I think the bigger story out of last night is the Texans. And are they? I think they're further down the rung right now than maybe we thought they were.
Well, I think really what the Jets did last night, and of course, when you move to 3-6 and you snap a 5-game losing streak, you're not totally out of it. A loss would have, I mean, at 2-7, like that's,
they would have been out.
They would have been done. It would have been impossible to come back from and even have a prayer at the playoffs. And I think what would have been obnoxious from my perspective is even at 2-7 and even really not having a prayer for the playoffs, that they're still like, because they're the Jets and because Aaron Rodgers is there, there still would have been like this made up relevance about them for whatever reason. Now, at least at 3-6, you still have a shot at it. So I'm okay with the conversation surrounding the Jets, even at 3-6. Is it likely they make the playoffs now? No, it's not. Even at 3-6, it's not. It's probably more less likely than it is likely. But I do think that at least you have continued what they did last night to push themselves further into relevancy, which a loss would have completely knocked them out of it. So I'm okay with the discourse continuing to surround the Jets and the intrigue and all of that about what are they going to do? Can they come back? Can they get back into the race? Can they do all of that? I'm okay with that at this point. Had they lost last night, I wouldn't have been. But you're right with the Texans. Like they are, even at 6-3, there are clear concerns that I think need to be addressed internally. And you don't have a lot of time to address them because the deadline is on Tuesday. I would venture to guess that they will be as aggressive as they possibly can be before Tuesday because that window is there. It's open. Even though you have lost your prized acquisition, Steph Diggs, for the season, I think that they will try to be as aggressive as they can.
I think the only urgency for them is the Steph Diggs piece. They're at the beginning part of a window. There's no doubt about that. They got a lot of young players. They've got a lot of young, affordable players for now. They still are, I'm sure, going to leave themselves the ability to be aggressive in free agency after the season. But yeah, they if you look around and the Chiefs are unbeaten and they're doing all this, you can't also not be a realist as an executive and say, but the Chiefs are dealing with a lot too. Like if they're gettable, are they gettable? And I would say if you're, the opposing contenders, you would say, sure they are. Yeah, they're definitely gettable this year. Now they keep winning these games and they're the champs and, nobody's betting against them, but don't let the unbeaten record fool you. They've got a lot of injuries and they're dealing with a lot of stuff. So I think all of these teams, and that's where, I don't even know if I don't even really care, quite frankly, if the Jets play themselves back into the postseason. I just think they become a team that you feel like could beat anybody any Sunday. The Texans should still be that. They probably are. They certainly are when they get Nico Collins back. How many of those teams are out there? Because that's what's going to just jack this thing all up, is how many of these teams are actually good teams. And I think, and by good, I just mean capable of winning any game, basically, in the NFL. And how many of them are there in the AFC? It's a lot easier to say how many of them are there not. I think there's three, four, maybe. The Raiders, the Titans, the Jags, and the Patriots. That's probably it. That you're just that's not a very good team. Everybody else is pretty capable.
Yeah, I think the biggest question for the Jets, and I know it has been, at least during the 5-game losing streak, their defense and the fact that it's been porous and they've given up a ton of yards and points and all of that.
And they gave up a ton of rushing yards again last night.
And Joe Mixon was great. I mean, that was the biggest weapon that D'Amico Ryans had for the Texans last night, was leaning on Joe Mixon. And at least in the first half when I watched, Mixon looked really, really good. But for the Jets,
he stayed good.
But for the Jets, for me, it was, you've got to get Aaron Rodgers up to speed in a game quicker. He's got to get, maybe it's just the way that it is because he's 40 and it takes a little bit of time to get going in a game. But the first half, he was awful. It's just objectively awful. And so he didn't end the game awful by any means. And Garrett Wilson had a phenomenal catch and all of that. That's great. And the Jets won the game. If it were me, if I were looking at, okay, what can we do if we're the Jets? What do we have to do? Not what can we do, but what do we have to do to continue to play ourselves back into the playoff hunt? We've got to get out to faster starts. We've got to find a way to get Rodgers in a groove earlier in the game as opposed to after halftime, because they're not going to always be able to come back like they were against the Texans last night. That's not realistic. They've got to try to find a way to get going quicker out of the gate.
I agree with that. I think that's going to come through running the ball. If they don't play good defense, they're going to be in trouble. But if you told me that, this is an offense that will rely on the run game and big plays from Aaron Rodgers, I kind of like that, but that only works if you can play.
It really hasn't been their game plan.
I agree. It ended up being that way last night, right? They ran the ball. They had the two big pass plays, and they played better defense. That's what has to be sustainable. The Jets aren't going to be in a team with a 40-year-old quarterback that are going to just consistently be in shootouts, which is what has happened to them. So can they play that level of defense? Well, they didn't stop the run again yesterday. And when you look they get in somehow to the postseason right now, you look at them in a matchup versus the Ravens or the Chiefs or the Steelers, these teams that can really run the ball. And it's they'd be in big trouble there, but at least they're interesting, which is all we can hope for, because it's been such a good storyline. And of course we always root for Breece Hall, but that's Thursday Night Football. Shuffling things up in the AFC certainly gives us a lot to think about as we watch the Chiefs and size everybody up as it pertains to the Chiefs. We'll make some picks later. There's some really good games across the league that we'll pick and do a little more of that as we make our way through. We'll get you caught up on K-State. Tommy and I look ahead to K-State. We previewed that with some of our insiders. We'll take a final look, give you some final thoughts there as well as we make our way through. On the way out here, I want to tell you that fall at Crestview Country Club is not slowing down. There's still golf. Of course, there's tennis. And then the club life away from the sports just gets going more and more. There's all kinds of brunch experiences for the holidays. They have a New Year's Eve event. There's youth activities to go with the adult nights. So if you want to go out, have a date night, you can send the kids out to one of the youth activities there. Give Crestview a call. All kinds of memberships. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. Tommy and I are members out there. We both love it and couldn't recommend it enough. We'll come back. 869-1240 is the IHOP hotline. It is open in hour number one because we're busy in hour number two making picks and getting ready for the high school football playoffs later tonight. Don't go away. I'll rock and Caster Sports Daily. Coming right back.
KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and across the Odyssey family and networks. Tommy, K-State Houston, afternoon game. Kind of odd for K-State. They've had a weird set of kickoff times, but they get a Saturday afternoon game against Houston. I mean, Houston beat Utah last week. I don't know how much to make of anything with Utah right now. They're not a great offense. Houston's not. I think they probably impressed you just a little bit more going into the Kansas game than they did me. I don't think they're very good. They can't throw the ball. Their quarterback last week, I didn't even heard of this guy, Chris, 6 of 13 for 61 yards. I mean, they ran it better for sure. But, you know, like K-State seems to match up really well against them. I guess I'll put it that way. I love the Cats in this game. I know it's on the road, and I know it comes in the middle of a really crazy portion of the schedule, but I feel like this is a terrible matchup for Houston.
The one thing about Houston to, you know, never forget about is that Willie Fritz is a hell of a coach.
He is.
And he's been really good.
He has a history of having K-State's number a
absolutely
little bit.
I mean, when he was at Tulane, I mean, they did that. And so he doesn't have the horses, I don't think, overall to compete with Kansas State from top to bottom from a talent perspective this weekend. But don't discount just the way that Fritz can get his guys up and rolling. Now, Kansas, when they played at Arrowhead a couple of weekends ago, the Jayhawks had their number. And really the biggest struggle that Houston had was figuring out the quarterback play. I mean, they went back and forth between two different quarterbacks. And I know that you mentioned, you know, Chris and all of that, but like they basically needed to figure out what they were going to do. I mean, Donovan Smith for the Cougars didn't have a good game against the Jayhawks, but then Zion Chris came in and they like kind of split reps in that Kansas game. But now it does look like it's Chris's job overall. So I don't know exactly the way that that will play out for Houston. I mean, I would think that if Willie Fritz is going with the sophomore, that he feels like that gives his team obviously a better chance to be successful in moving the ball and getting first downs and getting into the end zone. I just don't know when you're facing that level of competition with Kansas State, how realistic that is. But keep in mind, again, they did beat Utah. And I know Utah has been, you know, obviously they don't have Cam Rising and they're just not, they're a shell of their, what they thought they would be coming into this season. And Houston did get the win. If I'm the Wildcats, I would go into this game feeling confident. I would go into this game feeling like we are the better team from top to bottom. But just in the back of your mind, not forgetting that Willie Fritz is the coach and Houston is coming off of a 3-point win against Utah.
I don't think Kansas State's going to overlook Houston. Don't misunderstand, nor do I think they should. I think for me, though, like if Houston is in any world dangerous, the things that they're dangerous for or could be are things that match up well with K-State. So K-State, we know, is doing everything they can to stop running games so that teams will throw the ball. Well, I don't think Houston can throw the ball. So if K-State sells out to stop the run like they have, I think it's a real, real problem for Houston. And the other thing is, if I recall correctly, Jalen Daniels, Houston did a pretty good job stopping the run against Kansas. They did a pretty good job. They did a really good job, I'll say, stopping the run against Utah. So Avery Johnson then could feast to some degree, too. We've seen him now. That that chapter of this season for him. Oh, well, can Avery Johnson drop back and throw it a ton? Yeah, he can. We've seen him do it, right? We know that he can. He did it against West Virginia. So I just think it's a really good matchup for K-State stylistically.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity, I think, also for Kansas State, for their defense, if the defense can come out and flex a little bit, because Houston has only exceeded 17 points twice this season. The strength has been defensively for the Cougars. That's really where they've made their hay throughout the year. And so if the Kansas State defense can really shut down what Houston wants to do offensively, and probably I think that a large reason why Willie Fritz went to Chris as the starting quarterback is because he's been a little bit more mobile, or been able to have more success being mobile than Donovan Smith has had this season. If Kansas State can contain Chris, and not let him break free and have space in the secondary and beyond, then it's going to be really, really hard for Houston to exceed that 17-point mark that they've really not been able to get past many times this season. So it is a good opportunity, I think, for Kansas State's defense to once again show that they are solid and they are a successful defensive unit. I think that's really going to be where my eyes are in this matchup, is how well can Kansas State's defense limit anything that Houston wants to do offensively. Then at that point, you don't need to rely super heavily on the arm of Avery Johnson or on the offensive playmakers, because the defense is shutting down Houston.
K-State wants to run the ball. They always want to run the ball. If Houston slows that down, it gets into Avery Johnson. Look, the way that Houston stays in this game is if K-State makes mistakes, right? That will be basically the BYU formula, except that Houston's not nearly as good as BYU. So, Kate, this isn't a game where, like Kansas, I thought, K-State and Kansas were going to go blow for blow. That's what happened, right? No, I don't think that's what's going to happen here. K-State will have to make mistakes if Houston's going to stay in this game. So, you've got a 19-year-old quarterback. You got to always be aware of that. But I do think, even though Houston's been much better against the run, they'll still try to run the ball. They would still like to do that. That's where we look at this game, and we'll make picks and stuff from the bets and all that stuff. This isn't one, and I've been more on the K-State over this year for sure than the unders. This isn't going to be one of those games for me. Right now it sits at 45.5. I think the under is more likely here. So I don't know yet if I'm going to actually put money on that. I'm definitely putting money on K-State in the spread. And I've said that not to spoil the picks or anything coming up in just a little bit, but I love the number. I don't love the over under, but I would lean under. And that's probably the first time this year I've thought about an under for K-State in the way they're designed. But I do think that probably if they get to have their way, that's the way this game's going to go. They just don't want, you get the luxury of not having to take big risks in this game. You can play pretty vanilla in this game and you should be fine.
Yeah, and I think that really with the Wildcats, I think that they'll be able to be successful at doing this, but controlling the ball, controlling possession time, that's going to be key, I think, because the more that they, just basically can push around Houston defensively, I think especially, that's going to play into their benefit. You mentioned the key for Kansas State is to limit the mistakes. And while that's true, I think the key to Kansas State not only winning but covering the number is to limit. I mean, I think if they can get three and outs fairly consistently out of Houston's offense and the ball just continuously comes back to Kansas State, then at that point I don't want to say it's ever going to be an easy game for the Wildcats, but that's going to be the most likely recipe for big time success in this matchup. Because if they can keep Houston from moving the ball at all and keeping drives alive and that sort of thing, then the ball will just constantly be back in the hands of Kansas State. Even if they're not scoring on every drive, even if they're not getting into the end zone on every drive, if they just control the ball, control the time of possession, all of that, they're going to absolutely feast on Houston and just wear them down. I think that's what I'm looking at more than anything else. And it wouldn't shock me one bit if at the end of this game tomorrow we see a time of possession split somewhere around like a 2-to-1 ratio. I think Kansas State will hold on to the ball and have it about two times more than Houston does. And if that doesn't happen, if Houston ultimately wins the time of possession battle, that's when the game starts to get a whole lot closer.
Yeah, so the danger in the mistakes and all these things is that for Kansas State, and this is the part I don't want to overlook, like, this is a game capable of being weird if for no other reason than they had to go play a late game at Colorado on the road. They had to go play a late game at West Virginia on the road. They played a late game against Kansas back home. Now they're back on the road, right? So three out of your last four games have been road games. The time is different than it has been for almost a month now. And you have a bye week next week that you feel like is this point of the season for you to catch your breath with all of that. So that we know that that's dangerous in college football, especially when we're talking about a road conference game. And Houston isn't a nothing burger. They beat Utah last week. It just, stylistically, if you're K-State, to me, you like, don't overthink this one. Get in there, dominate the lines of scrimmage, run the ball if you can, and let Avery Johnson just, you know, be efficient, if nothing else. They shouldn't need to do more than that, and that's why I think they'll be fine. But, yeah, let's not misunderstand all the things that can make college football games weird and the weirdness of, you know, the locations and the times on their schedule. The last month, it's been a month, is something to watch. I mean, you know, slow start kind of a thing is out there. But we'll get more into it. We'll get Brandon and TJ and Paul's thoughts on it. I would betcha that nobody's taken Houston, which is interesting and always a little bit dangerous and scary. But we'll do that in our picks next segment. You've got time to call before we get busy with all of those things at 869-1240. You've got a chance to win some HTO right now as well. A free iced tea, sweet or unsweet, and iced or hot coffee. And Tommy, just out today, just unrolled, just dropping the new peppermint mocha.
Oh boy.
Holiday drinks are rolling in. Peppermint mocha. Year. You can get one of those. I'm sure it's delicious. I have not tried it yet, but I've heard very good things from the staff who have. You can text the keyword tea to the short code 20357 right now to win a free iced tea, free coffee. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good for any of the Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one right after this. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We'll make some picks and get into some football fun in the next hour, including the high school football playoffs, which begin, well, they began last night. They begin in earnest tonight, the opening round. Tommy, the Chiefs injury report first comes out yesterday. Everything's a day behind. Normally we get that on Wednesdays. This week we get it on a Thursday. A couple interesting things in there, I think, this week. Juju Smith-Schuster did not practice. I would guess that means he's not playing. Rick pointed out a little while ago on the video stream that he thinks they're just being cautious with him. Let him get healthy. Absolutely the right thing to do with Juju. No need to make this a lingering issue if you can avoid it. The other one that's pretty interesting is Michael Dana is back practicing. Limited capacity, but he was back out there. So maybe they can get him back soon. I don't know. Like, Uche's going to be a factor in the game, I would think, as a pass rusher. I know Spags' defenses are complicated, but you'd think he'd get in. They're going to have some pass rush reinforcements because of Minnehue is still not even on the practice report at all. But at some point, he'll come back, we think. They'll be pretty deep at that position, and that's going to be a pretty big strength, I think, for Spags at some point.
It's going to be interesting to know how that depth chart pans out once everybody is healthy and back, assuming that that happens, because you would then have, correct me if I'm wrong, but you'd have five mm-hmm. active pass rushers, and to me, that would seem like maybe Felix Anudike Uzomah is the odd man out. So I don't exactly know what that...
I think it'll rotate. I think if Uche is what he was in 22, you'll probably see more of a like Karloftis and Uche most of the time.
Yeah.
But I think it's far more likely that these guys rotate a lot and they're just fresh.
Because you're talking, after it. If everybody is healthy, correct me if I'm wrong again, but you're talking Karloftis, Uche, Minnehue, Dana, and Felix Anudike Uzomah would be the five.
That's what I've got in my brain, yes.
So, you know, I do think that, yeah, from a rotation perspective, that makes a lot of sense. I just wonder, like, is this, I know it's building depth. I know that's, you know, checking one box of why you acquire Uche. I think it also could be a little bit of an indication that FAU is not panning out the way that they want him to pan out.
There's no question about that. Yeah, I don't think there's any question. But I do think you've got like a best case scenario of Uche just being awesome, right? But a worst case scenario, you've just got some depth there when healthy. And that's a good thing too, because, you know, everybody, freshness matters, right? For, we know that for pass rushers. And we've seen teams do this. It's interesting. You know, Spags is blitzing a lot and utilizing that. But if you remember back to like those great Giants defenses, those were great defensive fronts. I don't think those were like heavy blitz teams, because like, what was the old book on Tom Brady, right? If you blitz him, he'll kill you.
Yeah.
But why did he struggle so much against Spags? Because they could generate the pass rush with only the front four.
Right.
So they didn't need to blitz. And I don't think that was as big a part of those old defenses. So it will be interesting to see Spags, who might have the league's best defense right now. And if he gets this depth, does he back off of the blitzing at all? Does he integrate it in? It's part of his brilliance, and part of why he's so good at what he does is because it's just, it looks different. Like, there's not one method to his madness, which is probably what drives offensive coordinators crazy. But having that tool in his tool belt to potentially not need to blitz as much, right? Because he's generating more pressure with the front, is pretty interesting to think about.
It's also less about the amount of times that Spags blitzes, and it's more about the timing of when he does bring the blitz.
Well, sure, yeah.
That's always what has made Spags so brilliant, especially in this role, in this tenure with the Chiefs, is he seems to time out when he's bringing people in a blitz perfectly. I can't think of a lot of different times where he's sent a blitz when he shouldn't, and then it ends up burning the Chiefs. I'm sure it's happened, but really it's kind of few and far between, I would imagine. And it helps when you have the personnel to not have to rely on that, to not have to lean on it all the time, because you do have, and historically they have had, some game wreckers on the front four, notably Chris Jones, where you don't always have to bring that blitz, and it provides so much of a, you know, overall step up from what a lot of other teams are dealing with in the front four, where you do feel like, I'm sure other defensive coordinators feel like, the only way that we're going to have success is to bring extra players because we don't have strength in our front four, and that hasn't been the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's it also helps the secondary, which is going to be a big deal and a probably bigger factor as they make their way to a trade deadline. I'm certain it will come to pass without them acquiring, although I wouldn't put it out of, you know, don't put it out of the question with Brett Veach and the way he's been operating this year. The Juju thing, we can go back to that for just a minute here. I'm fine with D-Hop there putting Juju on ice for a while. I mean, like, for a while. Juju can really help this team. He ain't going to help anybody if he's in and out of games dealing with a hamstring. At this point now with D-Hop, like, I am fine with them not doing anything with him. If he comes to you on, like, this Monday and says, I feel great, I feel 100%, I'm saying, that sounds great, can't wait to have you, you're going to still miss the next two games. Like, we can't have you coming out of games with hamstring injuries. We can't have these little nagging things. Like, if we're going to have you, we got to be able to have you. So I think that's the right way to play Juju, is to just be ultra safe. Now, if something else happens and they lose more depth, maybe you amp that up a little bit. But until then, with D-Hop there now and the way he looked last week, I got no pressure to rush Juju back at all.
I'm okay with that. And I think it's also because of, while the Chiefs don't have a really high ceiling on their depth at wide receiver outside of Juju, like the guys that would get the reps if Juju's on ice, there, a couple of them are at least relatively consistent, namely Justin Watson. And so if Watson ends up being, you know, more of a volume guy while Juju's on the shelf, okay. He's never going to really excite you. He's never really going to make you feel outstanding, but he'll be fine. It's serviceable. He's always been serviceable. It'd be different if they didn't have anybody to fill that role. You know, you might be tempted at least to rush him back as quickly as possible. But knowing that D-Hop is getting, you know, acclimated to the offense, knowing that Xavier Worthy can still be, you know, a dynamic type receiver, And then, oh, by the way, you also have got, you know, a Justin Watson that can be serviceable. Okay, like, that's fine. You can keep Juju on ice for as long as you need to.
And you get to be 7-0, so you have wiggle room and can afford to take the risks and all those things too, because they can, because they haven't been beaten yet, and they have games in hand here. When the Super Bowl is the only goal, you can do things maybe a little bit differently than you would have in the past. I'm curious, speaking of wide receivers, like, I'm pretty curious to see if Worthy has that moment where he becomes a bigger part of the offense this year. When they first drafted him, if we go way back and when we thought Hollywood and Rice and all these guys would be there, I always thought Worthy would be like us, not a huge part of the offense this year. They've needed him to be now. I just wonder, like, is he going to be able to take that step up too this season? Because that would be something that they could use as well. But Travis Kelce's back. It just no need to rush Juju back.
I'm okay with that. I'm all right. You know, things may change, and obviously from game to game, depends on, you know, how healthy you are and how banged up you are and all of that. But for right now, you know, like, for instance, this game coming up on Monday, which I know we'll have more about after the weekend. But this game on Monday Night Football against the Bucks, do you need Juju to win the game? No. I think you have to go through that process week by week with the personnel that you have and say, do we need this guy to win this game? And at least for right now with Juju Smith-Schuster, the answer is no. That might change, by the way, when they go to Buffalo. Like, things could change pretty significantly between now and then. Like, you might want to have him for the Buffalo game. But I think you have to do that exercise week by week. And right now for this game on Monday night, I would say no.
Yeah, I would say no, too. You're going to lean into your defense in that Bucs game. There's no doubt about that. You're going to lean into your defense, and you're going to let them guide you the rest of the way. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to make some picks when we come back. We've got three college games. We've got three NFL games to get to. And then we've got to talk high school football playoffs. It's a jam-packed hour number two. Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland, Paul Savage, and I will join. I'll be hitting the road, but I'll still be making picks. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Let's help everybody make a little money or have some bragging rights and all of these things. We're coming right back. Don't go away. Sports Daily on a Friday, everybody.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on this Friday. Tommy Kester, Jacob Albrecht, Jad Chambers producing the program, Paul Savage in with us. TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner, all in with us from 12 News. It is that time of the week where we always go through our Friday football picks, give you some of the best games of the weekend, both in college and in the NFL, and give you our picks on how we think things are going to pan out. Jad, I don't know if you have, we didn't talk about it, I don't know if you had the standings from last week pulled up and ready to go.
But I did.
Okay, so how did things pan out last week for all of us?
Well, I got to say, the story of last week was TJ. That actually worked out really well. TJ had a really awful start to the year, but has been kind of hanging around, and then won last week at 5-1.
Okay.
He jumped over you and took sole possession of second place. So, TJ, right now starting to do quite a bit better. Jacob, Tommy, you guys are tied third place or fourth place, however you know.
Tied for third. Let's say that.
Go,
I think
go
that's
ahead
a good,
and say tied for third as opposed to tied for fourth.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. And then Jacob, you're one of the tied. Brandon, you're still a ways behind.
Bringing up the rear there, unfortunately.
Yeah, 18 and 34. But really, nobody's threatening Paul.
Nobody.
Everybody is a couple of weeks' worth of games away from threatening Paul. So
yeah, I know.
If you're going to make a run, got to do it now.
Now's the time. Bring it on.
TJ, I got to tell you, my favorite part about the fact that you went 5-1 last week is that that wasn't even the lead from Jad. The lead was how awful of a start of the year you had. I love that.
That's fair. It's how bad it was. I would do it too.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. Well, we've got 6 games to choose from this week, 3 college games and 3 NFL games. As I mentioned, all 5 of us are here. Jacob is on the phone joining us on his way to the airport. So we've got everybody here. We're ready to go. Jad, let's go ahead and hit the music, and we will get right into our picks of the week. We will start on the college ranks, and this is probably the game of the weekend nationally. You've got Ohio State, Penn State. This is interesting because both of these teams feel like that they've got a pretty solid claim to not only in the Big Ten, not only playing for a Big Ten title, but also going to the college football playoff and maybe even winning a national championship. Penn State, 3.5-point dogs. This one's really going to be interesting. I'm a little bit surprised that the spread is where it is. Jacob, I know you're on the phone with us right now. Let's start with you. What do you like in this matchup?
I like Will Howard. Statement game. Will Howard's chance for revenge. I think Ohio State is just better than Penn State. I know they've had some quarterback injury issues. I'm going to take the Buckeyes here. I know it's a road game. I know it's big. I think they're better. And go Will Howard, right? Let's go with the Buckeyes.
Yeah, that margin for Ohio State really is not very big as far as, you know, continuing on in as a top 5 team, top 3 team. Both teams obviously have to have it for the college football playoff, but I think the pressure is, you know, definitely on the shoulders of Ohio State. Paul, how about you?
Well, I like this game. This is going to be an entertaining game to watch. It's going to be a physical game, which I always enjoy. Penn State at home, it's not an easy place to play. Happy Valley is not so happy if you're usually the other team. This is a tough one for me, but 3.5 points. If it was 2.5, Tommy, I probably wouldn't take them. But that 3.5 might be just enough for Penn State at home, at Happy Valley. I'm taking Penn State. Probably a dumb pick, but I've got a few picks I can throw against the wall and not worry.
Hey, you're right, though, in the fact that Happy Valley is always a difficult environment to play in. And when you've got a spread that is more than a field goal, that's interesting. TJ, let's go to you next.
Yeah, talking about Happy Valley, I think that if this was going to be a night game, I think that I might have leaned the other way as well because, you know, having it at noon, you know, everybody's tired. The college kids aren't as ramped up. It's not going to be as loud as it would be in a night game. And I like Ohio State, you know, what they're a half second away from being the number one team in the country still. If Will Howard just slid a second earlier, they probably would have won that game. They're still probably number one right there. So I'm going to take the 3.5.
Lay the 3.5 with Ohio State. Brandon, how about you? You've got some ground to make up. What do you like here?
I was going to do the strategy of riding Paul, but he just said he made a pretty dumb pick, so that would be pretty dumb of me to tell that. And also, Penn State, we don't know who their quarterback is going to be this week. Drew Aller, we're not sure if he's going to play. That's going to change things for Penn State if he doesn't go. I think Ohio State could take this one. It's going to be a close one, but Buckeyes have a tougher path to the playoff with their schedule than Penn State. Penn State can afford to lose another one, get to the Big Ten championship, I think. Give me the Buckeyes.
All right, so it's up to me. I'm the final pick here to prevent Paul from potentially starting things off with a Penn State island, a home island in Happy Valley. That's
with points.
With points.
Ah!
You know, I like all the reasons that you guys listed with Ohio State. I like those reasons, and honestly, if I wasn't trying to prevent an island, I probably would have agreed with you. I'm going to take Paul. I'm going to take Penn State. I'll take the points. You know, and really, I do like, honestly, Paul, I like the assessment of if it was 2.5, it'd probably be different.
I wouldn't do it.
But 3.5 getting within that field goal, if Penn State can, you know, keep it within that field goal late in the game at Happy Valley, I mean,
that's what I'm thinking.
I think, honestly, the way to go. So I'm gonna join you, prevent you from getting that island.
It was
so
good for you.
3 on Ohio State, 2 on Penn State. Let's go into the Big 12. Texas Tech, Iowa State. This one's a really interesting line. Jacob, I'm going to, we'll get to you in just a second. In fact, you'll pick last here. But you and I talked earlier this week about this line, about where it started, and about how, you know, really Texas Tech is not given much respect in this game. So I'm really interested to hear your pick, Jacob, at the end. But Paul, let's start with you. Iowa State laying 13.5 at home in Ames. What do you like here?
I did a double take on the points. I hadn't really followed that spread this week, so I took a double take when I got the message from Jacob. This is a pick and this is the points. That's a lot of points.
Yeah.
Is Iowa State that good? I mean, they're good.
I mean, they're good. They're a top 10 team.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah. They're a good team. But 13.5 points is a lot. You know something? I'm tempted to take – this is at Iowa State.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Iowa State. I just literally, right in front of you guys, talked myself out of taking Texas Tech in 13.5 points. I'm going to take Iowa State.
It's an interesting line because it is within two touchdowns. It's less than 14 points. TJ, does that play into it at all in your mind?
I think that the reason that Texas Tech isn't getting any respect on this line is because they don't deserve any respect. They lost to Baylor by 34. They just lost to TCU this last week. Sorry, Paul, I know you're wearing your Baylor sweatshirt today. Iowa State's going to dog Texas Tech in this game. I would take it minus 20, maybe.
Okay. All right, Brandon, do you agree with that, or are you going Texas Tech in the points?
I absolutely hate this game, hate this line and everything, but there's just no confidence in me to pick Texas Tech. And I got to try to catch up to Paul somehow. So we're gonna keep riding the points with Paul. Give me the Cyclones.
You know, it's a Texas Tech team that, while TJ, you're right, I mean, they lost to Baylor, they lost to TCU. They've kind of fallen apart as of late. They do have the capacity and they've got the talent to be able to put up points and to be able to win games. It's been a Jekyll and Hyde type season, I think, for the Red Raiders. I'm gonna lean with you guys. I think that Iowa State, especially at home in Ames, and knowing the way that Texas Tech has played lately, I'm gonna take the Cyclones. I'll lay the 13.5. It's tough because of the number of points, but I'm gonna join you guys with that. Jacob, you've got a chance here for a Texas Tech Island. I think you're probably drooling to take that Island. Am I wrong?
I am. I don't know how to, you know, TJ's logic of the Penn State fans being too hungover to be a factor is interesting here, because I know how Iowa State fans like to party on the early game. Yeah, I'll take Tech. Look, the only thing that concerns me about it is that Iowa State had a bye week last week, but Iowa State snuck by UCF at home. You know, they barely beat Iowa. I don't think they're quite as good as to be almost a two-touchdown favorite against the middle of the road Big 12. So I'm gonna take Tech. They've been Jekyll and Hyde. Maybe we'll catch Jekyll this week.
That's honestly not a bad pick, just because of the number of points. And there's a lot. I mean, this could be a backdoor cover game. I mean, there's no way around that. So that's interesting. We've got two islands in our first two games. Let's go to our third college game. This is the game that, of course, locally we're paying the closest attention to. Kansas State on the road at Houston. You know, with this game, again, it's another big spread. We're talking 13 points for the Wildcats going to Houston. We know they probably don't have the firepower. The Cougars don't have the firepower to match up against the Wildcats. But I don't know. It's hard to discount what Willie Fritz can do in these games. And by the way, Houston beat Utah a week ago. TJ, let's start with you. What do you like in this game?
As much as I want to pick Houston just for the fact that Willie Fritz being a Pitt State gorilla, I don't think I can do it. K-State, it's the storybook that they do every single year, where they're going to drop one early in Big 12 play or one in the non-conference, and they're going to find a way to just absolutely shove at the end of the season and be in the conversation to play in Arlington. It's following suit. They got to win out pretty much. I think it starts this week.
Brandon, how about you? Do you think this could be potentially an emotional letdown game for the Wildcats after the Sunflower Showdown last week?
Yeah, this is a tough one, especially because, I mean, we hear Klieman talk about it all the time, the late Saturday game, they're late getting in Sunday, they kind of lose almost a whole day of prep there. It's going to be nasty weather, it looks like, down in Houston, too. Could be a big factor, but I just think this K-State team is in too good of a spot. I think we're going to see a lot more Dylan Edwards now that we're into the final 4 weeks of the season. I think they kind of wanted to keep that card close to the vest a little bit for one reason or another. He's averaging almost 7 yards a touch. Unbelievable. I think he gets one or two this weekend. Give me the Cats.
You know, I think that the definitely the recipe for success for Kansas State in this game, guys, is to control the clock and to keep the ball, to have as many possessions as possible, to force three and outs against this Houston offense that is not very good. The longer that the Wildcats possess the ball, the better off they're going to be, especially in a situation if the weather is bad down in Houston. If they can do that, I think that they could win by multiple touchdowns. I think they will do that because I just don't think that Houston can keep up with what Kansas State wants to do. I'm going to take the Wildcats as well. I'll lay the 13. Jacob, how about you? What do you think?
I think I'm all over the Wildcats in this one. I just don't think Houston's very good, and I think it's a really bad matchup stylistically for Houston. So I'm taking the Cats. I'm not thinking twice about it. That'll be actual money for me this weekend on K-State.
Paul, you've got another opportunity for an island here with the home Houston Cougars. 13 points you can take and get an island. This is a Houston team that just beat Utah by a field goal last week. Are you going to ride that island, or are you going to join us with Kansas State?
Well, this is not Fantasy Island. This is Gilligan's Island. That's what this is right here. This is not a good island. I do not like this island.
Okay.
This is a tough island.
You're not going to take this island?
I would under normal stances, except Houston stinks.
Yeah.
Houston?
They just beat Utah, though.
Well, every once in a while, Utah is not the team we thought they were going to be either.
They're not.
We thought they were going to be pretty good, and they're not very good either. So I'm not going to take Houston. I'm going to make this a sweep. I hate to do this, and I'll make this prediction. K-State doesn't throw the football over a dozen times. They're going to be able to run the football. They're going to get this game over. It's going to be a short game because there's going to be a lot of running of the football. Clock won't stop a whole lot. I'm going to go ahead and take K-State. This game will be over quick, and there won't hardly be any passes by Kansas State. It's going to be a run game, and why shouldn't it be? I'm taking the Cats.
Wow, so a clean sweep. Jad, I've got a project for you. I don't know how many sweeps, if any, we've had this year in these picks. Like, it's probably few and far between. I mean, you don't have to do it right now, but I'd love to know
at some point
how many sweeps we've actually had.
That'd be interesting.
That's interesting. Let's go to our NFL picks here in this game. So we're going to go Miami and Buffalo. Brandon, let's start with you. The Bills are laying 6 points at home against a Miami team that is sputtering, but they do have Tua back at this point. The Bills are clearly, I think, the arrows pointed upward. Do you like laying that 6 points knowing that it's within a touchdown?
This Buffalo team is just clicking on all cylinders. They've struggled the first half of their last couple games. But also, when you just look at this matchup, when the Dolphins are fully healthy, the Bills have won 6 of 8. And I think they've covered in 5 of those 8 as well, if I'm not mistaken. I just do not like where this Dolphins team is at all. I love the Bills. This is probably going to be a real money play for me. Give me the Bills.
All right. Jacob, how about you? Are you laying the points with Buffalo, or do you think that the Dolphins can get it done?
Oh, my God. I've really struggled with this one. This is why I put this one on here. Miami's desperate. I think they're desperate to make some big plays, and I think Buffalo is due for a little bit of a letdown. I think I'm going to take the points here. I wish I had a weather forecast in front of me, but if they want anything this season, they're desperate for a right-now game. They got embarrassed against Buffalo the last time they played, so I'm going to take the points here and take Miami.
Paul, how about you?
This is the easiest game of the week. I can't believe Jacob's making, this is a tough game to pick. This seems to me to be a pretty easy pick. The consistency of Buffalo has been really interesting. Miami's had its share of problems. I mean, I've enjoyed the Miami Dolphins, having watched them in Hard Knocks, in-season Hard Knocks, and you get to know a little about them. I like the coach. I like his style. Tua worries me. I mean, Tua is literally, guys, one slide away from, being done with football for the rest of his life. That worries me if you're a Miami fan. But we hope that nothing happens to Tua. But I worry about the guy. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think it's enough money to play when you have a family like him. But anyway, with that being said, I'm going to take the Bills in what I perceive as the easiest pick of the week.
I think there's an argument to be made, too, that, you said he's one slide away from being done with football.
That's right.
That slide may have already happened, and he should be done
already. That's
against the Bills, too.
Against the Bills, 100%.
That is an excellent point, yes.
I'm going to go next, and then we don't have TJ for the remainder of the picks, so I've got his picks, and I'll let you guys know what he ends up picking here. But for me, I agree about Buffalo. And I'm going to say that it's due large in part to Amari Cooper, but not because I think Cooper is going to have a huge game. I think it's because him just being on the field allows those other wide receivers to get theirs a whole lot more. And that certainly helps Josh Allen significantly. It takes pressure off of James Cook as well, and that defense. I think the Bills have too much firepower. I'm going to take Buffalo as well. TJ is also taking Buffalo. That means that Jacob gets an island there with Miami and the points on the road. We'll see how that pans out. This is, in my opinion, the game of the weekend, the one that I'm most excited for. Detroit and Green Bay in Lambeau, inside Lambeau. The Packers are 2.5-point home dogs against Detroit. Jacob, I think you are kicking us off and starting things off with us. What do you like in this game?
I'm going to, for all the reasons PJ Glasser talked to us yesterday, if you didn't hear his breakdown of that game, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. This has been a really good spot for the Packers historically under this new regime. I'm going to just assume Jordan Love plays and is okay, and in that situation, I'll take the home points in a game against between two really good teams.
All right, Paul, let's have you go next. In this game, in this matchup, you've got Green Bay as home dogs against a Detroit team that I know you love. Any concerns about, I know it's always been this narrative about Jared Goff playing outdoors. Any concerns with you about that?
No, not really. I mean, granted, here again, I'd like to know what the weather is. The weather's been brought up several times, and we know it can be kind of nasty in Green Bay. Hopefully it's still early enough in the year it won't be, but I don't think it would matter to the Detroit Lions anyway. I'm going to take Detroit just because they're a solid football team, fellas. They're a solid football. Are they spectacular in anything? No, but I think their defensive line could be borderline spectacular. But do they have that star? Is Goff a star? Is he considered?
He's borderline star. I would say approaching that category.
But this is that team. It's a team. And that's right. What Dan Campbell believes in. Team football. I'm taking Detroit. I think this could easily be a 10 or 12 point game.
This is the hardest game, I think, of the week for me to pick, at least, because both of these teams are really good. And what throws a wrench into it, in my opinion, is that it's a divisional matchup. And sometimes divisional matchups get kind of screwy. You're talking about the best division in the NFL. You're talking about two teams that not only feel like they should win the division, but they also could be legitimate contenders for a Super Bowl, especially Detroit. I'm going to actually, as much as I do like the Lions and as much as I like what they've done offensively, I think I'm going to take the Packers. I'm going to take the home points.
Okay.
They just have that, I think, that capacity to be able to make it close, number one, but outright win the game, number two. I'm going to lean towards Green Bay at Lambeau, and I'll take the points. Brandon, how about you?
Now, Paul, there is two areas that the Lions are spectacular in. It's their offensive line, and it's their running back duo of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And also, this is something that no one has brought up. The Lions almost basically got a bye week last week. They beat the Titans by 50 or had basically that whole game in cruise control. I think they were able to rest a lot of guys, and I just like where this team is at. I think they're going to be able to go in, run the ball, and do enough to cover against a spotty, injured Jordan Love, given the Lions.
It's a 2-2 tie. Jacob and I are both on Green Bay. Paul and Brandon are both on Detroit. TJ is going to break the tie and take the Packers. As well as myself and Jacob. Our final game that we'll pick this week is the Monday night primetime matchup. The Chiefs back inside Arrowhead. It's been a minute since they've been at Arrowhead, taking on the Buccaneers led by Baker Mayfield. They're dealing with some injuries. Of course, Chris Godwin is done for the year and all of that. The Chiefs are laying 8.5 points. Paul, let's start with you. It's a lot of points for Kansas City, but they're back at home against a Buccaneers team that is banged up, but they're probably, outside of the Falcons, the best team in the NFC South. What do you like?
How much pressure can the Chiefs get on Baker Mayfield? That's my question. I think a good amount. Is it enough? It probably will be. For that matter, and I'm going basically with the defense for Kansas City, although how can I say that when you got a Patrick Mahomes at quarterback? But I think you get my drift. Right now, I like the way the Chiefs are playing. I'm going to go ahead and take the Chiefs, although I'm not comfortable with the 8.5. It's a home game. That helps me a little bit. But quite frankly, this game just boils down to how well will Baker Mayfield throw the football and control the football and keep the football out of the hands of Patrick Mahomes. Baker Mayfield is the key. I don't have near as much confidence in him as I do guys up front for Kansas City.
I like Baker Mayfield a lot. I like the Buccaneers a lot. I liked them last year. I like them this year. They're a fun team, and they definitely have the capacity to be a playoff team yet again this year, despite their injuries. That being said, though, I'm leaning on one thing here, that the Chiefs continue to cover the number. They have covered the number in every game but one this season. Because of that, well, I take that back. They didn't cover against the Raiders, so every game but two. But that was another huge spread. This spread is a little bit smaller. I'm going to lean on the Chiefs just because they've done pretty well this year in covering the spread. So I'll take the Chiefs. I'll lay the 8.5. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, how about that backdoor cover last week by the Raiders? Yeah. I love that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and I mean, Baker has thrown 7 interceptions in his last 3 games. The injuries are starting to just come apart for the Bucs. I think the Chiefs team is in a good spot to come home. Their offense, they're putting up points. They're averaging 26 points, I think, the last 4 weeks now. Too much leading to the Chiefs this way. Give me the Chiefs.
All right, so TJ is also picking the Chiefs. So, Jacob, that means that you've got a chance at another island here. I think that would be, what, island number 3? For you this week, if you take the Bucks and take the points on the road, what do you think?
Oh, you got to do it. You just got to do it. Come on.
I hate the line. I mean, I hate the line a lot. I think it's too big. I think that the Buccaneers, even injured, are better than the Raiders. But the Chiefs are at home. I think the Buccaneers can throw to the backs, which is, you know, always been challenging for the Chiefs. And I think they've, you know, got a tight end they're featuring, which has been a, you know, problem for the Chiefs. I can't go against the Chiefs' defense this time at home, and I do think that they can move it around a little bit. I'm going to take the Chiefs. I'm not going to do
wow.
it.
Wow!
Wow!
Boy, I want to. And
three
I think
islands. I could have had three.
I think I was on an island with the Raiders last week too. And
yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm just at home, I can't do it with the Buccaneers and all the injuries they have. I got to take the Chiefs. I don't like this. I don't like this line though at all.
You know, I mentioned just a few minutes ago that I don't know how many sweeps we've had, and now we had 2 this week. Jad, do you have that number?
Yeah, this is the first time this year that we've had 2 sweeps
okay.
in a week. But back in week 2, all the way back in week 2, everybody picked the Lions over the Rams.
Okay, that was our only other sweep.
That's
that
the
we've
only
had.
Other
That's
one.
It?
Yeah, that is
wow,
it.
I didn't even realize
okay,
that.
Okay,
wow.
So now we've got 3 overall for the entire year because of 2 this week.
That's amazing.
That has not happened this year at all with us.
Also, looking at everybody's picks, it has surprised me how many times Jacob and Tommy pick the opposite from one another. They don't go together on a whole lot of picks I've been looking at. And what is it this week? Let me look into it this
well,
week.
Well, I mean, I think the reasoning behind that, it's pretty simple. I mean, Jacob's terrible at this.
Yeah, we have the same record. Is that correct?
I guess we do have the
yeah,
same record.
You have the same record.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we're not picking the same teams to get there.
Yeah. No, not very. Now this week, I think it's 3-3. You've tied with. So
well, okay. Well,
3 times you've picked the same, and 3 times you haven't.
We've got a couple of islands this week. We've got a couple of sweeps this week. We'll see how it all pans out on our Friday football picks. Brandon, appreciate your time. Are you headed to the golf course? Looks like you're on your way.
How'd you know?
I mean, you're dressed like it. Bundle up. I mean, it's getting a little chilly out there, but it should be a beautiful afternoon, though, for some golf.
Yeah, we're going to try to go low and stay warm. We'll do it.
All right. Jacob, enjoy your trip, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Sounds good, fellas.
All right. We're going to take a timeout on the other side. Paul returns. TJ will rejoin us as we get into Catch It Kansas and talk high school football, and the playoffs are underway. We'll do that on the other side. It's Sports Daily. We're coming right back.
Easy with going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. Just a reminder that tomorrow we've got the Kansas State game on the road at Houston right here on KFH. Of course, you can listen on your radio, 97.5 and 1240. You can also pull up the free Odyssey app and join Wyatt and Stan and all of the action as the Wildcats travel to Houston tomorrow afternoon, of course, right here on KFH. We're talking high school football now. TJ Cleland rejoins us from Ketchik, Kansas in 12 News to talk about the playoffs. We are there, TJ. The brackets have been out for a week or so. It's that weird time with the brackets where you've got, you know, 1 versus 16 matchups and 2 versus 15 matchups and all of that. So I'm sure it could be a little bit difficult to try to find really compelling matchups in this first round of the playoffs. But from a top view level down, and we're talking about any class, 6A all the way down, are there some good matchups that you're looking at for this weekend?
Yeah, there's some real kind of hidden gems, you know, like you said, especially in, you know, class 6A, 5A, 4A, they don't do the regions like the smallest classes do. So pretty much everybody kind of makes a playoff. So you're going to get some lopsided. You're going to get some, you know, 8-0s versus 0-8s, everything like that to start. But sometimes you're going to get, like our game of the week, it's Hayes coming to Andover. Two teams that are 4-4, and it's really interesting because of the way that they do this. I just literally had to hop off the show to go Zoom Tony Crow, the head coach of Hayes, so I feel like I'm Adam Schefter here coming straight back. but when you look at these, they're both teams, they're 4-4. Hayes has lost to Derby, Manhattan, Great Bend, and Liberal on a last-second fluke thing. Andover has lost by less than a score to, you know, Capen and Goddard and Eisenhower. And it's unreal, the resumes that these guys have. Coach Crow just told me, he's like, this makes you really wish that they had a committee like college basketball, because all of their losses are quad one losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm looking at that bracket right now, and it's interesting because, you know, of course, you've got some Thursday night games that, you know, obviously have taken place already. Goddard Eisenhower, they beat Emporia last night by a final score of 55-10. So, you know, in that whole bracket, I mean, you're talking Andover and Hayes. You've also got some other matchups like Bishop Carroll going on the road to Liberal. You know, so there are some really intriguing matchups, May South and Salina Central, the 7-10 matchup. But at least the one game, TJ, that we got last night in 5A, the 2-seed Eisenhower, they're moving on to the next round.
Yeah, they're really good. Frankly, that's the best way to put it. Carter Papps is probably the best wide receiver you're going to find in the state, in my opinion, at least the ones that I've seen. You know, there's some that are on the east side probably going Division I or big Division I, everything like that. He's going to North Dakota, and I really think that just watching him, I think that his stock could be so much higher than North Dakota. No offense to them or anything like that, but he's a power five wide receiver. You know, we watched a highlight. Every time I think about Carter Papps, I'm going to think about the highlight that we saw last week. He caught a ball, got clocked, his helmet came off, and still got 5 more yards after contact. If that tells you anything about how tough a wide receiver he is. I think they're really good. They're going to be a team that's going to go really, really late into this bracket. I like Great Bend a lot. They're going to go really deep into this bracket, and it's going to be a really interesting 5A, as it always is.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
You know, it's obvious because of the format, Tommy.
Your mic is on. There you go.
Oh, sorry about that. It's very interesting, partly because when you look at these brackets right now, the first round, Tommy, is always going to be, you're going to have those matchups that seem way out of whack, but that's the nature of you know these many teams in a playoff. Everybody's going to get in, you know, 1 against 16. There's not going to be a lot of games. You're going to have a lot of great games right in the middle. Those teams that with the middle seeds, you're going to have some really good, close, hard fought victories. But I want to ask you, TJ, the one game where you have a 1 and a 16, or a 2 and a 15, or a 3 and a 13. Give me that one game where you go, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody other than that higher-ranked team wins this game. Do you have that game? Do you have one of those?
It's tough, especially in the way that high school football is this year. Especially, I mean, when you look at the one and the twos on our side, you know, you've got Derby at the number one. I don't think Derby's going to lose. I don't think that Great Bend is going to lose. They're the one. And so it always is fun to look at those and everything like that. And there always is a chance. But I think that this year, with the amount of strength that we have towards the top, because I think that, you know, the one seed in 6A is Derby. They're the best team in 6A. 5A, Great Bend. They're at least top two, top three in 5A. So the teams that we have that are number one and number two are going to be really, really good. So I don't think that this is the year that we see anything like that happen.
All right.
Let's drop down to 3A really quick, TJ. Going through the brackets, one thing that is really interesting to me is that you've got Andale, you've got Collegiate, you've got Cheney that are all on the same side of the 3A bracket in that particular region. So there are going to be, I mean, you would think, conceivably, some pretty big matchups regarding one of those three teams earlier in the playoffs than what we would see before we get down to, you know, close to the finals or the semifinals. Was that interesting to you when you saw the way that bracket fell in 3A?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, obviously 5A and 6A is probably where we're going to find the most talent on the field for some of these matchups. 3A is the sicko bracket where there's always good teams and there's always, because of the region, the seeding is all out of whack and you're going to have fun matchups pretty much the entire way through. You know, you're going to have second round matchups of, I think, Cheney Collegiate play in the second round if they both win, which is a game that could be the state championship, honestly. That's going to be a really, really good one. 3A is going to be so much fun because you name those three, Pratt, Collegiate, and Cheney. Were last week, Andale is undefeated. Cheney has one loss. Pratt has two losses to Collegiate and Cheney. You look at Heston, who is undefeated, just lost to Andale. They're another team. And Heston, they go 7-1. And the way that this works is they get to play against the greatest tight end in probably Kansas history this week, as Lincoln Keir is coming to Heston. Goodwin looking for their first playoff win in 20 years, I think. They're a really good team, obviously, with the talent that they have. A couple kids going to play college football and obviously a five-star tight end. So weird things can happen. Heston's a really good team, too. 3A West is going to be awesome the entire way through. We're going to have matchups. Next week, they're going to be state championship matchups. They're going to have a week after that, they're going to be state championship matchups. And it felt like 2 years ago, it was always going to be Andale's to lose. It felt like that last year until it happened. Now we know Andale can lose, and it's just a matter of, are they going to? And if they do, who's it going to be to?
You know, I'm going to ask you about a question about how the sausage is made, if that's all right. I'm going to – here's my question.
I would be careful about the way you ask that. That could get really dangerous.
I got you. I understand that. But, you know, with the way things are, you know, for your TV station, you've got to make some tough choices because you only have X amount of time, and I'm talking about the 10 o'clock broadcast, that kind of thing. What are you going to show? What are you going to emphasize? How do you want to portray the playoffs? How do you pick what games you want to air? Is it got to be competitive? Is it going to be one of those middle rounds that's competitive? Or do you show something on Derby? Because let's face it, that's not going to be – that game could easily be 70-0, as you know. How do you go in – what goes into making the choice as to what do you at KWCH – what do you highlight?
Yeah, it's tough. You're right. You know, and it is definitely every Sunday afternoon I go in there, I turn on some NFL football, and I just, you know, walk in, get the entire slate, write down all of our top, you know, ranked teams, kind of who they're playing against. And then I kind of just start going through and highlighting, kind of ranking them, you know, 1 through 10 or whatever, how many we're going to get. I think tonight we're getting a little bit of volleyball too, so we're going to be light on the football side, but we're still going to have a lot of stuff. State volleyball going on tonight too. But you know, going through them, and you're right, you know, Derby's a team. We do all this game of the week and we really kind of, you know, pomp and circumstance, doing all these live shots at their place and doing a whole bunch of stuff, kind of playing it up and talking to the coaches beforehand. We haven't talked to Derby yet because Derby beats everybody by 50 points. Yeah. So it really is kind of interesting, and we're kind of just banking on, yeah, we're going to talk to them eventually because they're going to be a team that's going to be playing deep in the playoffs. We're going to talk to these teams eventually. So, we haven't doubled down once. I think that this week we're going to talk to Andover for the second time, and that's the only team that we've talked to twice. We haven't been in the same stadium twice, and that really kind of shows how, you know, deep of great matchups that we've had this year, and I can see that continue to keep going on. But as you said, you know, trying to keep them competitive, especially towards the top, we want two teams that are going to, you know, be a one-possession game, that are both going to have some crazy talent and everything like that. And then going down, we just kind of get the best show. You know, we're trying to get Derby on there. We can watch Dasan and Brain play. We're trying to watch this kid play that's going to be playing on Saturdays, everything like that. You know, just being a guy that watches a lot of football, just what's going to entertain me is kind of what it is.
Very good.
TJ Cleland from Ketchup, Kansas and 12 News joining us here on Sports Daily. You mentioned playing on Saturdays. TJ, one more for you before we get you out of here. Northwest is the 3 seed in 6A. They're playing at home tonight against Southeast. And the guy under center, Jalen Mason, committed to the Jayhawks earlier this week. He chose Kansas over schools like Iowa State and Liberty. He's a junior. He's led Northwest to a 7-1 record so far this season. It's a pretty exciting commitment for Lance Leipold and the Jayhawks. Is this a guy that could be an impact player for Kansas, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I talked to some of the guys that work for, you know, 24/7 Sports that'll be out recruiting at these games and everything. Jalen Mason is a guy that a lot of people don't remember. My first year covering high school football in the area, he was at Mays. He was the freshman behind Avery Johnson. He was the one that was backing up Avery Johnson, got to learn under him, came in a couple of times in some of the blowouts and just kind of showed what he could do. And it was somebody that was just like, this kid, you know, he's got some potential. He's super fast. He can throw the ball and he's, you know, 6'3" or whatever he is. You know, this could be somebody that could be something. Ends up transferring to Northwest last year, kind of gets in there, gets a little bit of play, shares some time with Chase Glasper, but still it's just like, you know, this kid is going to be something special. And these guys are coming out and talking to him after the games. And I think he's the top rated quarterback in 2026. And it's for a reason. You know, he still found a way to kind of fly under the radar, in my opinion. He only had those three offers that you named. Had a ton of, you know, scouted from all over the country and everything like that. But I think that he's going to fit in right where they like to do it. You know, you look at Jalen Daniels, you look at Isaiah Marshall, who's coming up next. You know, he could be the one behind Isaiah Marshall and just keep the lineage going. And if, you know, obviously their offense is kind of clicking. If you look at KU's numbers, I know a lot of fans want to fire the offensive coordinator, but we're not going to get into that. the way that they do things, they dual threat everything. They run that option so well. Jalen Mason is a guy that you could kind of probably not plug and play. He's a 17-year-old, but by the time he gets up there, you can plug and play him and get in there.
Let's see how deep he can lead Northwest in the state playoffs. And, of course, a lot of it gets going tonight. There were a couple of games in the brackets last night, but the full slate is completed today, and then we'll move on to the next round. TJ, before we let you go, where can folks find you? What do you guys have going on at Ketchup, Kansas?
Absolutely. Rachel Hallam back with us this week, going out to our game of the week. As I said, Hayes versus Andover. We're going to have live coverage starting at 4:30. Every about 30 minutes, we'll have a live hit from her. Then we'll have our live 12 News kickoff show here on 12 News Connected, if you're watching here, talking about our favorite matchups, making some picks as we do every week. I think I've gotten hot recently. Zinner's gotten cold, as he has on this show as well. So going to have a bunch of fun there. Catch a Kansas show, 10:35. As I said, we're going to have some state volleyball, everything like that as well. So should be a really fun day. The playoffs just amplify everything, and it's just a lot more fun to do it whenever it's win or go home time. It's more fun for us too.
100%. And of course, like you mentioned, all the results on the Ketchup Kansas show. You can also go online, ketchupkansas.com, to get all of the info. And then, of course, we'll talk to you again next week for our Friday football picks and talk about the second round of the playoffs. Enjoy it. Good luck, and we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right, there goes TJ Cleland from 12 News, Ketchup, Kansas, here on this Friday edition of Sports Daily. We'll step aside for a timeout. On the other side, we'll have our final full segment, talk about some of the other big things going on this weekend, whether it's in college football or the NFL. We'll do that on the other side. Tommy Caster, Paul Savage, in for Jacob Albrecht as we finish this Friday. Jad Chambers producing. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Our thanks to TJ Cleland from Ketchup, Kansas and 12 News, talking about the high school football playoffs getting going this weekend. We'll, of course, have an update from him next Friday as we get into the second round of the playoffs. You can go back and listen to our entire discussion about high school football on the free Odyssey app. Paul, we've got a couple of minutes before we wrap up the program, and I know we'll discuss this more in the days to come, but we're only a couple of days away from all three of our local D1 college teams.
Oh, there we go.
Tipping off their basketball season. You've got Wichita State and Kansas both tipping off on Monday night, and then Kansas State tips off inside Bramlage on Tuesday night, taking on New Orleans. Wichita State on the road at Western Kentucky, and Kansas starts things off inside Allen Fieldhouse Monday night against Howard. I asked you this question during the break. Out of those three teams, which one are you most excited to see play in their opening matchup, either on Monday or Tuesday night?
Well, I think it's got to be KU. I think it's KU, but I'm really interested in Wichita State. Here's the problem with Wichita State is I don't have a grasp for this team yet. I mean, you know, it wasn't a great preseason matchup, and the same with KU, obviously, was not a great matchup. I don't know about those two teams. I've got to see them start playing somebody.
Sure.
And then I'll have a better feeling. But I guess if I had to say, it'd be Wichita State, because there's some questions that I personally have that I'm not familiar with on this team. I want to see these kids play together. I want to see Paul Mills and his philosophy. We just talked to him, two days ago?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
And so I agree with his philosophies. I like the way he is approaching this basketball. I like the way he is approaching the AAC. I like everything about it. I need to see it, and we need to see it with some good competition. Wichita State's going to jump into it pretty quick.
Yeah.
By the way, don't sleep on Western Kentucky. Right. This is not a bad basketball team.
What's their mascot? Are they the Hilltoppers? Is that Western Kentucky? What are they? I think that's what they are.
But
Wichita State, they're the only team out of the three that we just brought up between them, KU, and K-State that goes on the road for their opening game. Mm-hmm. They're on the road at Western Kentucky.
Right.
On Monday night, and of course, KU and K-State both are at home to start off their seasons. I think for me, it's Wichita State. And that's an easy answer, at least for me, because Kansas, you know, they've got newcomers. They've built up depth. They've got some new guys that I want to see how they contribute, like A.J. Storr and Ryland Griffin and David Coit and some of those other guys. But we know, by and large, their talent level. We know Hunter Dickinson. We know DeJuan Harris. We know all of that. And that's great. Kansas State has brand new talent as well that I think it's going to make them a really exciting team. But for Wichita State, the optimism, I think, is there that there is going to be, or at least there should be, a major step forward in the growth of this program in year number two under Paul Mills. They've got newcomers that have been able to come in, and I feel like really amp up the energy level and the excitement and the optimism around this team. And I would imagine that that's something that Paul Mills discussed when he was on earlier this week.
Yeah, and I was really excited to see in the preseason game that Corey Mills had a really good game, shot the ball well. Corey Washington. Because we interviewed him, two weeks ago?
Yeah.
And he was a nice young man. I enjoyed the interview. It's good to see him do well. Shot well from the three, shot well from the field, defended fairly well from what I could tell from the stats. Did not see the game, but evidently I'm sure he played well. So I'm kind of curious as to Wichita State. They're the team that I want to see. There could be a really upside that we don't know. It all depends on how this team comes together, how quickly they buy into Coach Mills and what he's selling and what he wants them to do. The sooner they buy in, the better this team is going to be. There's no telling. And by the way, I think for the three teams in the state of Kansas, the three major teams, Wichita State has the possibility of more growth than the other two teams, because the other two teams are already pretty good. They're going to be good. We know they're going to be good. But Wichita State is a question mark for me. I'm sure it's somewhat of a question mark.
It is a little bit, but it's more of a I think an optimistic question mark,
because
I like the talent that Paul Mills has assembled this season.
Right.
It's just a question of
how fast
and how much growth from year one to year two. Kansas State has guys like Coleman Hawkins that I think is set to be their leader of the team, especially offensively. Brendan Housen, we talked about yesterday, him shooting the three ball a lot in their exhibition game against Fort Hays State. So that's all going to be a lot of fun. And then of course we just know the tremendous talent that the Jayhawks have this year. And that will continue. A reminder, we will have Shocker Basketball on the airwaves Monday night on our sister station, 103.7 KEYN, on the road at Western Kentucky with Mike Kennedy. We'll talk more about that game on Monday night. And then Kansas State Tuesday night right here on KFH with Wyatt Thompson. All right, we're going to take our final timeout of the program and of the week. On the other side, we'll tell you what's coming up on the network today and this weekend. Don't go away. Sports Daily, it's coming right back.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod. That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.